tell you something, I'm in desperate need of Owen 16. My age of taking them, distribute them elsewhere.
Oh, you need one.
I don't have a 116. Okay. Let me recognize Representative Phillips, and then we'll try to make sure we're proceeding off the same set of amendments here.
The 107 amendments were the ones Representative Dix and I moved. Representative Hanlon brought up some issues as we were moving through those that we amended in. And thus, you ended up with 116. There were other issues raised that need to be clarified also, but that's why the difference between the 116 and, for example, there was a small change on line 2, or page 2, and another change on page 4, but there's other issues within the bill that also have been highlighted for discussion, but generally that 107 package is 116 with those noted exceptions.
Okay, so 116 represents the action taken by the subcommittee?
I believe that's accurate. Mine was in my notebook.
No.
Yours wasn't there.
I know. I looked in my notebook and I know.
Representative Bond?
Yep. While we're waiting, Mr. Chairman, I have gone through 107, which is now 116, and developed what I think are some consider housekeeping amendments, and then in addition some substantive amendments, and at whatever point you preferred, I would be willing to run through those.
Okay, I want to make sure that everyone's got a copy of the 116 amendments.
Sure.
Who else doesn't have a copy of the 116 amendments? That's
it.
Is that it?
Okay. Two out in the audience raised their hand too, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'll note that on the 107, there's actually only one word different than the 116. Only one word than on the 116. And the other motions, amendments that we've put in that Representative Hanlon has raised are not in 116 for whatever reason. I have marked them on there so I can let people know what we in fact adopt so that they can write in the two other words that he put in. So they're not substantive changes from that, and I can, if you've got 107, so I can point those out.
Okay, well, let's just, so the amendments do in fact reflect the action taken by subcommittee. Is that in 116?
116 is the closest to representing the action taken, although it is not in the entirety of what, because there were three things raised, two of them are addressed, and the third one was inadvertently not added. And that's, council was unfortunately popping in and out, and we had a different council that when some of these amendments were being made, and I would assume that perhaps is a reflection.
Okay, well, Representative Phillips, while we're awaiting the arrival of the 116, which are very similar to, though not identical to, the 107, which members might refer to. Representative Dix?
I was just going to suggest there are different amendments for each of the sections, that we take the sections one by one, dispose of the amendments that are proposed, and move on to the next section. Skipping the cap question until the end, in deference to Representative Burns' request, and I agree that that's the section that's going to take us the most amount of time.
Okay. Do you want to begin, Representative Phillips, with the punitive damages section?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Before he begins, one other technical question. This morning you were given a 119 set of amendments.
That's Representative Burns.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I can explain where those came from.
Okay.
119 is the same as 116, except it incorporates the housekeeping amendments I developed and the substantive change amendments I developed. So as we go through each section and I raise those parts, you can refer back to 119 to see what the changes are.
Okay.
Secret carry-on.
Okay, so runs. In fact, I do. Now,
okay, Phyllis, you want to go ahead and start with the punitive damages sections?
You bet, Mr. Chair. Punitive damages, and I'm working up 116, which is identical to 107. So you know, okay? The language we adopted dealing with punitives generally reflects the bill that was passed over to us. We changed the issue of the standard of proof. We dealt with the health practitioners as was dealt with in the main bill. We distributed the amount of money half to the prevailing party and half to the criminal injuries compensation account as was done in the main bill. We set in on provision of dealing with punitives as it applies to an employee versus employer action, and set up so that the case will be done punitive damages we decided by the same prior fact, but in a supplemental proceeding. I think that's briefly the highlights, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Were there any further amendments or discussion to those sections relating to punitive damages, Mr. Chairman? Rep. St. Bond.
In our discussion in subcommittee, we talked on page 2. Let me ask a question. Are the page numbers and line numbers the same for 107 and 116?
So far,
yeah.
Okay. Well, you have a 116.
Okay, then on page 2, line 20, where we have the words issued and without malice.
That is the correct language. We took counsel from counsel and decided that the action to change that was done appropriately on page 1 but should not have been done on page 2. And that's
fine. That was just a housekeeping thing I was going to raise. And the second issue I wanted to raise, Mr. Chairman, as Representative Phillips indicated, the bill envisions bifurcating the trial and having the trial and then the punitive damage issues dealt with in a separate hearing process. And because of that, I think it's important that we make it clear that we do not want evidence that would be used solely for punitive damage purposes brought in the earlier hearing. So if you refer to your dash 119 amendments, if you look at page 3, lines 5 through 9, those lines simply make it clear that evidence that is admissible solely for punitive damages shall not be offered until the punitive damage stage of the hearing. And with that, I would move the addition of those lines 5 through 11 of the dash 119 amendments.
Well, I don't have 119.
They were supposed to be handed out to everybody.
Okay, we're on.
They're loose and not in the book. If anyone would like further explanation, I can run through that again. I think, in a sense, Mr. Chairman, that's just housekeeping because it makes the evidence introduction simply conform to the process we've established.
Okay, is that a motion, Representative Bond?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Bond has moved, I guess the best way to say it is that Section 4 of the 119 amendments be substituted for Section 4 of the 116 amendments. Is that correct?
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Where? What language in there?
It would substitute Section 4 and 119 for Section 4 and 116.
Mr. Chairman, I might also mention this did not come up at subcommittee, and it's just I caught it on the reading of the bill.
Okay. Is everyone clear on the amendments being proposed? Any further discussion?
Yes.
Representative Hamlin.
Representative Bunn, with this bar, any evidence that had been offered at the original proceeding to be offered at the time of the punitive damage proceeding?
No, it would not.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bauman.
Representative Bunn, does this become a new standard for relevancy?
No, well, perhaps the answer is yes and no. What it says is that we won't, and if I don't answer the question directly this way, ask again, we won't take into that original hearing anything that is solely a punitive damage issue. If it deals with the merits of the original action, absolutely it comes in. But if it's, for example, to the amount of assets the person the action is being brought against, that is relevant only to the level of punitive damages, and therefore could not be brought into the original action.
I appreciate that, and that does answer the question, and I guess the follow-up question, Mr. Chair, if I could, is, doesn't the evidence code and relevancy requirements in the trial, don't those rules already take care of what Section 4 is attempting to do?
Mr. Chairman, you could argue they did. The two problems you have is, number one, we have a long history of a non-bifurcated hearing where there is a normal process for bringing these items in, and to change that practice to make it absolutely clear what the intent of the legislature is, I felt would be helpful here.
Further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Bunn's motion.
No.
Bami?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No.
Motion's adopted. Anything else on the punitive damages sections?
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Hearing no other action. We have the economic, non-economic cap. Now we're on page 3 of both 116, 119, and 107, so that everybody's clear on where we're at.
Where we at?
Okay. That's the cap. And as you recall, Representative Dix suggested that we move that to the end of the discussion. So everybody's clear, we're not skipping it, did not come back to it, we're just putting it at the end of the agenda.
Fine.
So the next issue that we will deal with will be on page 4, or at least the title is on page 4, the actual substance dealing with product liability and punitive damages is on page 5. The subcommittee made no changes in this issue.
Question, folks.
Well, let's see. Hanlon?
Maybe you disagreed, but I thought that this meant whether or not there was a performance standard under state statute or state government that solely referred to Oregon state statute and Oregon state government.
Okay, when you appropriately raised that question, and I followed up on it as I said I would, and if you recall the discussion when we read the language, we didn't think adding or specifying Oregon was going to be necessary. Again, that was confirmed. It was also said if you really wanted to do it, you could do it. So it was one of those kind of answers. Since we didn't make a motion to change it in or adopt it, it's not reflected in either 116. It wasn't originally in 107, so it's not there. And I don't know enough about 119. I would assume that it's not there, but I guess I'll have Representative Bunn speak to that. Speaking for Representative Bunn, I can see Oregon's not listed in that page, so.
Can I ask you a question?
What's in hand?
Representative Phillips, would you object to a motion that insert as a friendly motion that inserted on line 8 before the word State Oregon and on line 9 before the word State Oregon?
Well, you're free to make the motion. I oppose that as a friendly motion in subcommittee, and I don't. And the only reason I oppose it, I don't think it's necessary. Anybody can make any motion they want, I suppose.
Do you want to make motions as we go through here?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
What's in Bowman?
I just don't feel that the issue is very squarely in front of the committee, and I feel like this may be another issue that was put squarely before the subcommittee, but I've either got, you know, wax in my ears or I'm missing the point. Can we make the point of why it is that this is an issue at all?
Maybe it. Tom, Representative Hamlin asked if the standards, when we make reference to state, would the example was given the state of Alabama, if the state of Alabama had different standards than the state of Oregon, which state would apply under the section? And we were, our answers both were the state of Oregon standards. That's what we had intended in writing it this way, not the state of Alabama. So when we make reference to state rules or regulations, we're making reference to the state of Oregon.
Are there circumstances, Mr. Chair, may I follow?
What's in
apologize to Representative Hamlin. There are circumstances where there might be two standards, a federal standard and a state standard, and if that has anything to do with the fact that there is an issue.
I would venture to say there are probably situations where a product could meet the standards of one state and not meet the standards of the state of Oregon.
Representative Dix, I think the question may also be, what if there's a difference in federal standard and a state standard ought to apply?
I believe, Mr. Chair, you asked that question during subcommittee, and I suggested that it was my understanding that in that situation, the federal regulations would supersede the state regulations.
Even if they were less stringent than the state standards?
I don't know what the court says about that, but in conferring with counsel about it, it seems that in most instances, that's the case. I don't know if that's right or wrong.
Representative Hamlin?
I just want to speak on this. I disapprove of this entire division. I just want to make it clear to the full committee members that may not realize that. We had testimony about the Pinto case, and under this standard, there would be an absolute defense since the Pinto qualified under our federal transportation standards to any kind of product liability case. Then the question was asked whether or not, and I asked it whether or not this was only meant to be Oregon, because some other states might have less stringent standards that if they were met, they would bar any case involving that product in Oregon, even though Oregon had a higher standard. So my purpose was to at least limit the damage that this will do to our law in the safety of products in our environment to the standards within this state or the federal government.
If I might just put this on the table, because I know there'll be discussion pro and con. My understanding is when the Senate dealt with this issue, they weren't dealing with products entirely. They were trying to address the question of drugs. We heard testimony from Mr. Gardner during subcommittee, who offered an amendment -65 on this section, which ties this section down a little bit better with and addresses the question of drugs and the testing of drugs. And I will offer that as an amendment at some point when the committee is done discussing the section as it's written right now. It's -323C-65.
On that, if I might respond, while Mr. Gardner was concerned primarily about the pharmaceutical area, there are a number of other people that were legitimately concerned about the broader issue and brought that broader issue, and I think it's important that we maintain the breadth that we have there now, but be sure that we clarified the original question of Representative Henry.
Okay, and Representative Dunn, is it the intent then with this original language that basically plaintiffs are going to have a much more difficult time to get into court and to make prevail on punitive damages?
Well, I know the answer with an approach that it's easier or more difficult for a plaintiff or a defendant. My answer is, how does it accomplish the public policy that we're attempting to accomplish? And I think it helps to attempt to accomplish the public policy of saying that if you have met the regulations which you were requested to meet, that's the standard that you should adhere to.
The issue,
since if we adopt this language, we're speaking to adopting a set of standards to protect people in Oregon about which we know nothing. Is that or very little?
I don't understand the question.
I don't pretend to be very familiar with what the federal regulations are regarding the multitude of products that are available in the marketplace, so I guess the standard that we're adopting to protect Oregonians is a standard that we really don't know anything about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I disagree, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
If you have some more specific information.
Sure, I disagree with that very strongly. We have a number of federal standards, and Oregon tends to take the attitude that where we find standards that need to be dealt with in other ways, we deal with them in other ways. But to say that because we have federal standards and we're going to rely on those federal standards, we don't know anything about it, doesn't make sense to me. We can take, if the committee wants to take the time, any one of the federal standards in any area and examine it. I don't think the committee wants to go through that process.
The committee doesn't have the time.
Let's say Phillips.
Thank you. In product liability cases, this is not, let's look at it from a common sense approach. There's so many products out there, and there's the federal standard would in most cases, in all cases once they have federal standards, be looked at. If there are not federal standards specifically, there'd be state standards looked at. The concept of having a state standard for every product that was ever made, produced, delivered, whatever the case may be, is so bureaucratic in the first place and burdensome, you'd never be able to deal with it. That's why they have federal standards in the first place. And in any punitive damages case, the testimony just wasn't there that the federal standards wouldn't come in.
Well, I think Ms. Kloger spoke sufficiently to the adequacy of federal standards.
Just like to add another one that the federal government had standards on over the years, and that's asbestos.
Representative Dix?
Well, first of all, the section, and I hate to get bogged down, the testimony indicated punitives are rarely awarded in the state. I didn't hear any testimony to the contrary on that subject, so I hate to spend an hour on punitive damages. I don't think that that's leading us with the leading cause of insurance rates going up or the tort problem in our system. I do think that the people I've talked with in the Senate and the testimony we heard from Mr. Gardner, that this section is written is too broad, and I would move the -65 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, that's done. Before we vote on those amendments, I'd like briefly to respond to Representative Hanlon's last comments and just point out that there is a significant difference
between a federal regulation and a federal non-regulation. I would remind the committee that if the federal government has not regulated an area, there is no protection through this bill because there is no standard that protects the maker of that product from the liability.
Mr. Chair.
What's in brown and what's in books?
I guess my question here, and it does seem to me that the committee is discussing setting up really a threshold for what could potentially be a considerable number of cases, and that we are moving into an area that's a little bit more pressure on a kind of a negligent licensing kind of court, where my understanding is that there have been some beneficial results in terms of the adequacy of regulation that have come from this great kind of experimental pool that we have out in the general public that is purchasing products, and occasionally, very rarely, given the size of the pool, experiencing mishaps. And it seems to me that if it is the policy of this committee to shut down a whole area of being able to identify and answer and regulate according to experience, there's really no way that I can support this section either.
What's in Dick's? We moved the dash 65 and
we moved the dash 65, which replaced the existing section 6.
What's in Dick's was the 323-65 amendments to replace existing section 6 and the dash 116 amendments. So I'll have a copy of that, I trust.
Is there further discussion on that motion? Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may, let me make sure. You're saying, but your motion, Representative Dix, is to replace the present Section 6 with this Ad 65?
Correct, Mr. President Donald Burton.
Could I just back up a question, because I was not certain on this. In the 116 version, would there be anything to prohibit the state from adopting standards? This wouldn't prevent them from adopting standards by a product as they went along. No. But somehow, I guess I missed the point of the argument before.
Well,
something is escaping me here. Sorry.
I guess
in the absence of the standards, you'd use federal standards if they were there, and if there were no standards at all, or even if there were federal standards, you could still adopt state standards, which by statute, then you could say would prevail.
Well, I think there's a difference of opinion as to who would prevail if there were a conflict in federal and state standards, and I believe
it's all presently.
Because that's where the difference of opinion is.
I think it probably would depend upon the language of the federal standards. In some cases, the federal standards may be the minimum acceptable standards, and the state may be free to adopt more stringent standards. But it may also be argued that the federal standard would preempt the state standard. I don't know if that's clear in each and every case.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Chair St. Bond.
In most cases, that's stated, and where it isn't stated, it's litigated, and that's the state of the current law. I mean, the point is, we're either going to have a federal standard and we adhere to that, or a state standard and we adhere to that. Any confusion is litigated. If there is no standard, this provision doesn't apply.
One at a time, Representative Hanlon, and then Representative Bauman.
Mr. Chair, the question came up in the course of the subcommittee hearings as to whether or not the standard would still apply as a complete defense, even though it was later proved as an invalid standard or an invalidly adopted standard, and the answer was yes, because you could not determine at the time of the litigation. And
I think you ought to just do away with whether federal or state preempts. You look at the language in Section 6, and it's very clear. It says, adopted or approved by a federal or state statute. Or means if it's either adopted by one or the other. It does not refer to whether or not there's a conflict, nor whether or not one, the supremacy of the federal government would overtake the state. This is purely a standard for a defense civil claim, and I would think that would be within the state regulatory power no matter what. So you could take the lowest standard and have a good defense.
My question, sort of closely on the heels of Representative Hanlon, and it really is, what, you know, what recourse is there if the standard is inadequate? I think that answers possibly Representative Burton's question from before. This is looking to a situation where the standard's been set and the standard's been complied with, but, you know, there's information, there may be common knowledge among the people who work most closely with the product that the standard is not adequate, and yet there's no incentive for them to